This is Case Closed, 1 hour of mystery and crime from the Golden Age of Radio, every Wednesday at RelicRadio.com. Our first story comes from Richard Diamond this week. We'll hear the Garibaldi case from February 1st, 1952. That's followed by crime classics and Rashi Among the Crocodiles from November 4th, 1953.
Makers of Camel Cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Other cigarette has Camel's rich, full flavor.
No other cigarette gives you this convincing proof of mildness.
In a coast-to-coast test, hundreds of people with normal throats smoked only Camels for 30 days.
Noted throat specialists examined the throats of those smokers every week and reported
not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels.
Make your own 30-day Camel test. Smoke only Camels for 30 days. See how well Camels agree with your throat, pack after pack, week after week.
Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency, your plight is our delight.
Helen Asher speaking, a gal alone with just a phone.
Oh, clever, Helen, clever.
Thank you, sir. After all, you're not the only one who can make up corny slogans.
Easy, girl. You're crowding me.
Of course, I just might give up my slogans if you were on time for dinner tonight.
Well, that's a deal. I can't stand competition.
Seriously, Rick, I have a surprise for you tonight.
Oh? You're inviting a preacher for dinner, maybe?
No, nothing like that. But I'm fixing the whole dinner myself, from soup to salad.
Oh, great Scott. $4 million and she can cook, too.
Well, you just remember to go easy on lunch. I want you to have an appetite by the time you get here.
Helen, I couldn't think of eating anything that would spoil my appetite. Besides, the automat won't take slugs anymore. Well, I do believe little old me has a little old client.
Must be male. I don't hear your fangs clicking.
Oh, dear, you're so astute. Bye.
Bye.
You, Diamond.
That's right.
Well, what do you know? Odds were 10 to 1 I'd find you in.
You don't say.
Yeah, now get your hat, pal. It's 45 puts the odds in my favor. Now get up.
What are the odds on finding out what this is all about?
100 to 1 right now. You'll find out soon enough, though. Now come on. And Diamond, don't try no tricks. You do, when it's even money, you'll be a dead man.
Well, some people collect stamps. Me, I collect strange visitors. And the character who led me downstairs to his car was one of the strangest I'd seen all week. He wore a loud check vest, purple sports coat, and bright yellow slacks. And every time he opened his mouth, he gave odds on something or other. We drove through town, finally pulled up in front of a ritzy apartment house. He led me back to an apartment on the first floor.
Hold it. This is it. Inside, Diamond. That's far enough. Hey, Janet! Janet!
I'm right here, Freddy. You don't have to...
I told you it was 4 to 1. I could... Bring him here.
You win the bet, Freddy. Hello, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, hello. Fred, if you'd told me she was going to be here, you wouldn't have needed odds.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I'm a very sweet guy, especially with a gun in my back.
You can put it away now, Freddy, and take a walk. I want to speak to Mr. Diamond alone.
Oh.
Freddy.
Okay, okay. Only the odds are 3 to 1 I should stick around.
Mr. Diamond, I need your help. I suggested this to Freddy, and he said he'd bring you. I had no idea he'd force you to come.
Well, skip the apologies, honey. Just why do you need my help?
My name is Janet Collins. My brother is Bert Collins. Does that name mean anything to you?
Well, all depends. There was a Bert Collins sentenced to the electric chair a few months ago. Same one?
Yes, but he isn't guilty, Mr. Diamond. Bert was convicted of murdering a bookie, but he didn't. He tried to tell his story in court, but they wouldn't believe him.
And I take it you want to tell me his story now.
Exactly.
Well, I'm listening.
Bert went into the pool room to see this bookie about a loan. While he was talking to him, a stranger came in and shot the bookie. Said something about getting even. And the stranger dropped the gun and ran.
And what did Bert do all this time?
Well, he was stunned. He bent over the body and picked up the gun just as the police rushed in. It looked like he did it. Only he's innocent, Mr. Diamond.
Honey, as I remember it, your brother had a fair trial. 12 men disagree with you about his guilt.
I know that. But there's one man who can prove he told the truth.
Oh? Well, keep talking.
There was a witness to the murder. A little racketeer named Tony Garibaldi was in the pool room when it happened. He saw the stranger come in and kill the bookie.
Why didn't this come out at the trial?
Because we couldn't find Tony.
We?
Freddie, Bert's lawyer, and myself. We have witnesses who swear they saw Tony enter the pool room and rush out after the shooting.
But you haven't got Tony.
No, and he's the only one who can prove Bert is innocent. Unless we find Tony by tomorrow, it'll be too late. Please take the case, Mr. Diamond. Find Tony Garibaldi.
Well, I can give it a try. This is a big city, though. Tony could be hiding anywhere.
I know it's a hard job, but I'll pay the usual fee and I'll be very grateful, Mr. Diamond. Very grateful.
Mm-hmm. Well, save the gratitude for later, dear, after we find Tony Garibaldi. Oh, Diamond, a pretty face, a sob story, and you get into the screwiest cases. Find a cheap racketeer out of 7 million people. I wonder what kind of odds Freddie would have given me on that. I caught a cab back to my office, picked up my card, then drove down to the 5th Precinct. I was hoping Lieutenant Walt Levinson could give me some lead on Tony Garibaldi.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Diamond.
Mr. Diamond? Well, so formal.
New policy. Commissioner decided we were getting too lax here at the 5th Precinct. Henceforth, we are to treat visitors with dignity and respect.
You don't say.
Yeah, and stop grinning. What do you want down here, anyway?
Oh, I'm working on a case. You remember Bert Collins?
And how? Grilled him after he was arrested.
Tough boy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm working to spring him.
Yeah, he was one of the... What? Are you crazy? Collins gets the chair tomorrow night.
I know, but his sister says he's innocent.
And you believed her?
I don't know. She wants me to find a punk named Tony Garibaldi. Says Tony witnessed the murder and can prove Bert didn't do it.
Oh, yeah, I remember. That's what Bert told us. We tried to locate Tony, but he's dropped out of circulation.
You think Tony really saw the murder?
Who knows? Guy next door to the pool room said he saw Tony enter and come out later after the shots. Look, Rick, there's no doubt that Bert did it. The patrolman on the beat rushed in, found him standing over the body with a gun in his hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, then why is Tony hiding? And why would Bert's sister want me to find Tony unless he was sure he could free her brother?
All I know is we had all the evidence against Bert that we needed. He tried to borrow money from the bookie. Bookie refused. They had a fight. Bert shot him. Open and shut kiss.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, Walt. I'm still going looking for Tony Garibaldi. Any leads on him?
Yeah, I'm afraid not. Chances are some of the petty rackets might know where he is. Tony's worked all the cheap rackets, got a lot of friends.
Well, I guess I start covering the petty rackets then, huh?
Yeah, good luck, Rick. Bert is innocent. I'd hate to see him burn.
Well, if I find Tony, I'll bring him into you here.
I'm glad you said if. If you find Tony and if he can clear Bert Collins.
That's right, Fatty. If. New York is a big city, and like any big city, it has a lot of rackets. Everything from fake panhandlers to phony insurance salesmen. But someone in these rackets might know where I could find Tony Garibaldi. So I began checking. One racket after another, charity rackets, used car rackets, everything. Yeah, a lot of people knew Tony, but they hadn't seen him in months, or so they said. It was late afternoon by the time I pulled up in front of Sneezy Williams' apartment. A few years back, Sneezy had organized every pickpocket in town, formed a sort of a union. There was a chance he might know Tony's whereabouts. I got out of my car and started for his apartment.
Don't turn around, Dan.
It couldn't be your finger sticking in my back, could it, friend?
No, it couldn't be. Walk toward that alley, Diamond, or I'll put a hole right through you.
That's a pleasant thought. Now, pal, if this is a stick-up, you're in for a disappointment. The only green stuff in my wallet is moss.
Shut up and don't turn around. That's far enough. Diamond, I hear you've been looking for me.
No. You're Garibaldi?
Shut up! I'll do the talking, Diamond. I don't know what your angle is in this or why you're after me, but I want you to lay off.
Well, why are you hiding, Tony? What are you afraid of?
Never mind that. Now, look, I've heard you're a right guy. I hate to do this, but you've got to understand I'm not kidding. Keep away from me, or next time you won't get off so easy.
Tony, listen to me. Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here are a few words about smoking enjoyment. Listen to this report by leading throat specialists. After making more than 2,000 weekly examinations of hundreds of smokers from coast to coast, smokers with normal throats who smoked only Camels for 30 days, noted throat specialists reported
not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels.
That's proof of mildness. Proof offered by no other cigarette.
Start your own 30-day Camel test. Smoke only Camels for the next 30 days.
You'll soon see how mild, how flavorful, how thoroughly enjoyable a cigarette can be.
You'll see how well Camels agree with your throat. Pack after pack, week after week.
How mild, how mild, how mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see. Smoke Camels and see.
And now, back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
I was looking for a little racketeer named Tony Garibaldi. Only instead of finding him, Tony found me. And he left a bump on my head as a not too gentle reminder that he didn't appreciate me searching for him. But now I was even more determined to find him for two good reasons. One, he might save Bert Collins from the chair. And two, I wanted to repay him for that crack on the head with interest. After I'd come to in the alley, I went to a cafe on the corner, smoked four Camels, had two cups of coffee, and washed my face. I felt much better as I walked back up the street to Sneezy Williams' apartment. I climbed the stairs and knocked on Sneezy's door. When the door opened, Sneezy stood there, his face screwed up like he'd just bitten into an unripe persimmon, then... Relief spread over his pudgy features, and he held out his hand.
Ricky Diamond. Long time no see.
How are you, Sneezy?
Bad, Ricky. Awful bad. Come on in.
Well, thanks. What's that smell?
Fumes. From my vaporizer over there on the table. I gotta breathe them. It clears up my head.
Oh. I hear you've gone up in the world, Sneezy. Pickpocket union, huh?
Diamond, please don't use that word pickpocket. In the trade, we call them cadets.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be disrespectful.
A common mistake. Yeah, I organize the boys. It keeps them out of each other's territory, and I get a percentage of all their takes.
Mm. Well, that explains the fancy apartment.
Uh-huh. Only what good's though when you're a sick man like me? I got a cold all year round. I've been under a mustard plaster so long I feel like a hot dog. What brings you here, Ricky?
I'm looking for a man, Sneezy. But you might know where I could find him.
Well, it all depends. Come on, let's sit over here by the vaporizer. I gotta sniff those fumes. Who you after, Rick?
Guy by the name of Tony Garibaldi.
Tony, huh?
You know him?
Oh, sure. Worked for me a few years back. I haven't seen him lately, though.
Where was he living when you knew him, Sneezy?
No, let's see. Excuse me a sec. Ooh, them fumes feel good.
About Tony.
Huh? Oh, yeah. I should know it. Sure. He lived with his mother. Yeah, that's a nice old lady. I've been over there a few times.
But where, Sneezy? What's the address?
The address? Ooh, them fumes. You know, these vaporizers come pretty high these days. This one set me back $10.
All right, Sneezy, here's $10.
Vicky, you are a kindred soul.
Just make with the address, Sneezy.
Yeah, the old lady runs a dry cleaning shop over on 79th and 3rd. Right on the corner, you can't miss it. Ooh, them fool. Ooh.
Gesundheit. That last one must have registered on the Caltech seismograph. I left Sneezy with another Gesundheit and went out the door before he blew me out. Then I went to my car, drove across town to the cleaning shop on 79th and 3rd. Inside, I found a tired-looking old lady marking clothes.
Yes? You have come for clothes?
No, Mrs. Garibaldi. I'm looking for your son.
Tony?
Tony.
What is it you want with him?
I'd like to talk to him.
Your friend, the police?
Well, indirectly, yes.
Go away.
Now, Mrs. Garibaldi...
Go away. You're not dressed like a policeman. You're not from police. You wish to harm my Tony. Go away.
Mrs. Garibaldi, your son's in a lot of trouble. He might be able to save an innocent man from dying. I intend to find him.
Tony's in trouble, yes, I know. He comes here months ago, tells me he must hide. He does not tell me why. Why must Tony hide from men like you? Why?
Your son witnessed a murder.
This is a crime?
No, but Tony ran away. Now, if he tells what he really saw, perhaps an innocent man will go free.
Tony is a good boy. He wouldn't have wished harm to innocent man.
Perhaps Tony's afraid, Mrs. Garibaldi. Afraid some harm will come to him if he tells the truth.
Is this true?
No, the police will protect your son. But they can't protect him if they don't know where he is. He's in more danger now.
How do I know you speak the truth? You're not from the police. I know you're not a harm to yourself.
You can check with the police. Lieutenant Levinson, 5th Precinct. He'll vouch for me.
I do not know. You would not tell me to check unless you spoke the truth. But I do not know.
Where's Tony living, Mrs. Garibaldi?
Tony says I'm not to tell anyone.
Your son's afraid. People in fear don't think clearly. Now, where's Tony?
Tony's a good boy. There's no good. He must hide.
Where is he?
Tony must hide no more. Tony must tell truth. If I do wrong, me, I be forgiven, but I will tell you where Tony hides.
Mrs. Garibaldi wrote the address on a slip of paper. I called Janet Collins and asked her to meet me at Tony's hideout. Together, we might be able to persuade him to tell the truth about the murder. When I got to Tony's rooming house, Janet hadn't arrived yet, so I went up alone. And after 5 flights, I didn't bother to knock.
What's
that? Hello, Tony.
Diamonds.
Yeah. Now, punk, we'll have a little talk.
You get out of here. Leave me alone.
Now, stay right there, Tony. I've got the gun this time. And I'm itching to pay you back for that wallop in the alley.
I had to do that, Diamond. You don't understand.
Well, then suppose you enlighten me. Who are you hiding from?
You know as well as I do. They hired you to find me, didn't they?
It all depends. Who do you mean by they?
Colin's sister Janet and that Freddy character. They hired you, didn't they?
That's right. To find a chicken-hearted punk who might be able to save Bert Collins from the chair. You're quite a guy, Tony. Let Bert die because you're afraid you'll risk your own neck.
Oh, come off it, Mr. Diamond. You must know why they want me. Sure, I was in the pool room the night of the murder. That's why I gotta hide.
I don't follow you, Tony. Now, who was it you saw?
You're trying to tell me you don't know.
I never ask questions if I know the answers.
Okay, then, here's your answer. Sure, I seen the killer. It was Bert Collins.
What?
I was at a back table. Bert come in. He didn't see me. And after the shots, I got out of there fast.
Ah, you're lying, Tony. Why are you hiding if Bert really did it? He's been convicted. He can't harm you.
No, but his sister and that Freddy guy can. After the murder, they got in touch with me. Told me I had to swear I saw a stranger come in and kill the bookie. They told me I had to swear Bert didn't do it.
So that's why you ran?
Sure, I didn't want to get in trouble with the law. But if I didn't lie, I'd be killed, so I hid out.
Tony, if what you say is true, I'm the biggest stoop in town.
You gotta believe me, Mr. Diamond. I swear I tell the truth. And please don't tell them where I'm hiding, please.
It's too late for that, Tony. They already know.
What?
Yeah, come on. Let's get out of here. We'll get you to a safer place, and then we'll have to...
Hold it right there, kiddies. Odds of 5-1, I'll pull a trigger.
Well, well, well. Yellow vest, purple sports coat, and gray gun. Freddy, you're a regular Technicolor nightmare.
Better drop your gun, Diamond.
Hello, Janet.
Drop it. That's a sweet little boy.
You believe me now, Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, Tony, only don't rub it in.
Diamond, I'm sorry this has to be. I wanted you to find Tony, but I wish you hadn't talked to him.
Oh, Janet, you're a dreamer. This won't work. Even if Tony does swear Bert's innocent, the police will break his story. Your brother dies in the chair tomorrow night, and a lie can't save him.
We'll see about that. It's a chance, anyway.
Well, what about it, Tony? You gonna let him take you downtown and lie for them?
Well, I don't know.
I know Tony, Diamond. Don't try and fill him with false bravado. He knows what Freddy'll do with him. Unless he does exactly what we tell him. Don't you, Tony?
Yeah, kid, you know. The odds are 50-1 you'll say just what we want you to say.
I'm sorry, Mr. Diamond. I guess I gotta do what they want.
Oh, don't be a fool, Tony.
Shut up, Diamond. You've talked enough.
Freddy, I'll leave you here with Diamond. Tony and I'll wait in the car. Don't be long. Come on, Tony.
Diamond.
Now then, Diamond. Just you and me.
You make the most brilliant statements, Freddy.
Yeah, and the odds are... Hey, keep your hands out of your pocket.
Oh, take it easy, Freddy. There couldn't be a gun in this pocket. Just got a half dollar. See?
What's the idea?
Well, Freddy, old boy, the way I see it, I'm about to be shot.
That's even money, all right.
Well, I can't figure out whether to die a hero trying to rush you or just stand here and wait for you to shoot.
Huh?
Now, either way, I die. So I might as well decide which way I want it. Thought I might flip a coin.
Diamond, you must be a little off, huh?
Oh, Freddy, I didn't admit it before, but you see, I'm crazy about gambling, too. Just like you.
Yeah,
sure, huh? Sure. You can appreciate a sportsman wanting to go out like this to die on a gamble.
I don't know.
Oh, Freddy, relax. Either way, I die. Now, I'll flip the coin, 2 out of 3. Heads, I die rushing you. Tails, I wait for you to shoot.
It is sort of interesting.
Here we go. Up. There. Tails.
You're right.
2 out of 3. Up.
What is it?
Heads.
Well, go on. This one tells the tale.
Yeah, Freddy, this one tells the tale. I held the coin against my thumb. Freddy was interested now. He was the type who liked any kind of a bet, and in this one, the odds were all in his favor. But I always did like long shots. I flipped the coin high. Only this time, I didn't catch it. I let it fall to the floor, and Freddy's eyes followed it. This was what I needed. I threw him off balance, and the gun went clattering to the floor. Then my right hand plowed into a yellow vest, and my left hand followed through. And that took care of Freddy. But there was still Janet outside with Tony in the car. I stripped Freddy of his purple sport coat, put it on, and went downstairs. Outside, I saw Janet and Tony in a blue sedan parked at the curb. I lowered my head and went around to Janet's side as fast as I could.
Get in the other side, Freddy. Diamond!
No, take it easy, honey.
Let me go!
Oh, just relax now. You'll go somewhere in a minute. Tony.
Yeah?
Run out the corner and get the cop of the beat to take care of our little friends, will you? And make it snappy. I got a date at 7 o'clock. I wonder how Helen will like me in a purple sport jacket. I beg your pardon, Helen, dear?
I said,
Well, that's what I thought you said. Now, dear, please stop staring at me. It makes me self-conscious.
Oh, I just can't help it, Rick. I don't think it's right for a woman to tell a man how to dress.
I agree.
Only sometimes. Well, that purple sport jacket.
I was wondering when you'd notice it.
Oh, I noticed it when you first came in. I'm just getting over the shock.
Oh, I knew you'd like it, dear. Wait until you see my red, white, and blue slacks. I'm saving them for Lincoln's birthday.
Oh, now, Rick, what's come over you?
Personality, dear. Now, settle back and listen to your colorful boyfriend sing a sweet song.
Oh, what a way to spend an evening. A purple coat, a piano, and a private detective. And I'm the gal who graduated from Vassar.
And so to sleep again, as if I'll ever sleep again. These restless nights go on, away from you. And so to dream again, as if I'll ever dream again. My darling, since you're gone, my dreams are through. No other arms can ease this ache within my heart. No other lips can kiss away these tears that start. And so to sleep again, as if I'll ever sleep again, as if I'll ever love again anyone but you.
Oh, that was very nice.
Thank you.
Only I'm surprised you didn't sing a louder tune to go with your clothes.
Oh, Helen, Helen, from your tone, one would think you didn't approve of my new apparel.
Yes, one would, wouldn't one? One would ask, no, Rick. Rick? Rick? Rick.
Yes, dear.
More?
Well, I'd be romantic tonight.
Romantic, nothing. As long as you wear that jacket, I'd rather keep my eyes closed. Come here.
Dick Powell will return in just a minute. What cigarette do you smoke, doctor? When that question was asked of doctors from coast to coast, doctors in all branches of medicine, the brand name most was Camel. Why don't you smoke Camels, too? And say, why not give a carton of Camels for St. Valentine's Day? Camels come in a special carton all dressed up for the Valentine season. Give your Valentine Camels.
How mild, how mild, how mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to help bring pleasure to hospitalized veterans and members of our armed forces, the makers of Camel send thousands of packs of Camel cigarettes to service in veterans' hospitals every week. This week, the gift Camels go to Veterans Hospitals, Fort Harrison, Montana, and West Roxbury, Massachusetts. U.S. Naval Hospital, Quantico, Virginia. U.S. Army Station Hospital, Camp Carson, Colorado. And the Military Air Transport Service, which evacuates virtually all overseas wounded personnel. Now, until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Tonight's transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond was written and directed by Dick Carr with music by Frank Worth. Virginia Gregg played the part of Helen Asher and Alan Reed was Lieutenant Levinson. Others in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Gene Bates, and Parley Bear. Be sure to listen to another great Camel show, Vaughn Monroe and the Camel Caravan, every Saturday night. Here's Prince Albert, the National Joy Smoke.
The bite is out and the pleasure's in when you smoke Prince Albert. It's specially treated not to bite your tongue. The bite is out and the pleasure's in.
So pack your pipe with Prince Albert, the largest selling pipe tobacco in America. It's smooth, cool smoking. And say, there's more tobacco in the pocket tin now. So get Prince Albert tomorrow. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That's a couple of crocodiles roaring. They can do other things. They can snap. They can slither. As a matter of fact, when there are zoos around, they do this most often. They lay eggs, too, but no one's ever heard it done. The crocodiles who've been doing things for us are East Indian crocodiles, from a province in the south through which the Ganges flows. Each village in the province has its private pit, dedicated to the happiness of their slimy and slithering friends. And sometimes a fellow would lose hold and fall into the pit, or jump in, or be pushed in. However they got there, the crocodiles took them in their stride. People were their favorite dish. So tonight, my report to you on Rashi among the crocodiles and the prank he played.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Where the Ganges edged the town of Mahadwat, it was not holy. As a matter of fact, there was little to note in the town of Mahadwat. True, there was the crocodile pit, but the crocs were smaller than in, for instance, the village of Gumbau, just 3 miles down the river. Mahadwat had its share of temples, but they were kind of run down. It had its quota of fakirs, 4 of them, but none of them outstanding, as, for instance, the gray fakir of Gumbau, to whom everybody brought ashes. But it had one edifice of which the villagers were rightly proud. The house of Matabar, a rich and ornate house, of which Udi was its master.
It is written, when the moon is Ganges plucked, Vishnu looks with favor on a son who does not stray.
A gentleman, an old man, a widower with a son named Rashi.
Old man, listen to me. The world is not this village. The world is vast. And I must know it.
I plead with you.
The world, what I have seen of it. Fruits and ecstasies and all manner
Fool.
Of delights.
Fool.
It is written, he who tastes sweet...
I care not what is written.
And what do you do when you wander, son?
Beg.
You suddenly become a holy man?
I merely don my rags, proffer a palm, and when enough coins are placed there, I doff the rags. Then,
father dear, I dress splendidly again and walk to the bazaar. I have found, father dear...
Mariah, vulture.
I have found, father dear, that delights come most easily to a young man who dresses splendidly and who has coins. Surely that is written someplace. All will be written. Father.
What?
I would not stray. I would remain in the village if you would give me of your wealth.
I cannot.
And why can you not?
Until Rashi, until son, you prove yourself a man. Then will I gladly...
Old man,
give...
old man, listen to me. I am more a man than you could dream of. I've been far already, 100 miles from here, and I will go further. And there will be a day when I will not come back.
Speak not so.
And I give you another barb to chew on, old man.
Speak not her name.
Kamala. Kamala, the cousin to my cousin. Perhaps, father dear, I will marry her.
Speak not so. I beg of you, speak not so.
She is comely, father, and of our blood even. What if she walks slow by the river and tarries too long with the fakirs? What of the...
Get out! Get out of here! Go!
Very well. Shall I come back, father dear? Ever? Shall I?
Son. Son to me. Let me awaken you in your bed here in the morning. Be of my heart.
I will decide it. I will speak of it to Kamala.
Then I will decide it.
We have gleaned two things about Rashi. He was a gadabout who visited strange cities and begged the price of admission, and he was a bad son. Here's something else about him. He played a musical instrument, a reed pipe. He would go out by the banks of the river, find a clearing in the jasmine, sit and look at the moon. He liked very much to look at the moon, for this same moon rode over the far places, and Rashi was a dreamer. Then, to his dreams, he would finger himself a tune. You might say, didn't he draw cobras? No, he didn't. He drew his cousin's cousin, Kamala, who had a weakness for reed pipers, especially her cousin's cousin, Rashi.
Blessed evening, Rashi. Of sadness is your song, and longing. Why longing, Rashi? I am here.
That is the moon, Kamala.
Yes.
A moon my father will not buy for me.
Wicked father. Rashi.
Yes.
Were he to buy it, what would you do with it?
Give it to you.
Wicked father.
Miser.
Old father.
Who will not die.
Rashi.
Who will never die.
Rashi.
What?
I brought you a lotus to tie into my hair.
Again?
You tire of me?
No, I never will. Give me the bud.
Yes.
Kamala.
Yes?
It would be well if my father would die. Oh, widen not your fawn's eyes in dismay, but think of it. It would be well if my father would die. Then the moon and what it looks upon would be yours and mine.
Look you there, where the river bends. Huzur the fakir glows his coals. Huzur the wise.
Not so wise.
Wiser than you, therefore wise.
You would go to him?
He has said to me, saying, Kamala child, in trouble and in question, come to me. Kamala child. Saying, he said.
My father is a trouble.
Huzur the fakir glows his coals. Let us go to him.
Yes.
Yourself to the glowing coals, Kamala child.
I will be careful. Huzur.
It is grievous, this riddle you present. How say you it again?
The cousin to my cousin will tell it.
The riddle is this. In a far place dwelt a wealthy man. He prized his gold and his jewels above all, save his son. His son, to him, was as the gentle rain and the shining stars. Yet, impoverished, he kept his son. And the riddle is this, Fakir. Would not the earth spin more easily if such a father would die and be delivered of his wealth to his noble son?
I like riddles.
Well, would not the earth spin more easily, as Rashi has said, if such a father...
Rather, consider such a son. If such a son be dead, would not the father have an easier time? 20 rupees, please.
Do not pay him, Rashi. He has told you nothing.
Not 1 rupee, Fakir.
Very well. At least spread the coals for me so that I may walk and soon...
Spread them yourself.
Very well, child. Yet... I wish a blessed evening to both of you.
Blessed evening, Fakir. But no rupees. Come, Rashi.
What shall we do, Kamala?
We'll think of something.
How shall we start thinking?
With evil. Let us try that, beloved.
Enough food to eat.
Son, why do you mock me in the public market? And what you say is not so.
I am in rags, the son of a rich man in rags, nor is there enough to eat.
And villagers, listen.
These lies you are saying.
Why?
Listen all. My father sits among his riches and draws his hands over them and laughs in his beard. Nor does he give charity without expecting return.
Lies.
It is the truth. And I, his son, must share scraps with his dog.
I tell you this,
all of you, so if one day I am starved...
A curse on my son. Better he should be dead.
Which happened in the bazaar in the town of Mahadwat, so everybody heard it or was told about it. Results? Much nodding of heads and plucking at beards and mumbling and gossip at the wells. And more so when Rashi was suddenly not around any longer, not at his usual haunts, and no more piping of the reed among the jasmine. People forgot that Rashi disappeared from town quite often. Instead, they remembered what his father had shouted at him in the bazaar. A father had growled, and the villagers were mumbling. And one day, this happened.
What brings you to my house?
You are my cousin's uncle, Udi. Should I not be in your house?
Speak what you want, and go.
I have a letter.
From my son?
No, not him.
Where is he?
I will read you the letter.
Give it to me.
Gently.
Very well, then.
To Kamala, beloved of Rashi. Very well, then.
Read it.
Do you pray me?
I pray you.
To Kamala, beloved of Rashi. The father of Rashi has slain him and has hidden his body.
Lie. What lie is this?
So the letter says.
Who sent such a letter?
I found it at my door. There is no name to it.
It is a lie.
Nevertheless, I will journey to Gumbau, where there are people of England who are called Kulis. And I will show them this letter.
Kamala, child.
I will journey now.
I pray you.
This minute.
She did. She showed the letter to the police. They looked all around the village for Rashi. One of the more alert of them noticed that the crocodiles in the pit had been dozing for the last 2 days, which meant they had eaten a lot, which made the police drag the ooze. They found a bone. So they arrested Udi for the murder of his son, Rashi. The penalty for murder in the village was tearing a person in two. Listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. This Friday night, hear the Death Bargain Murder Case, one of the most thrilling yet for Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons. Under the terms of a strange agreement, two beautiful actresses find themselves in the shadow of violent death. It's a puzzler that calls for fast action and deduction by the old investigator, Mr. Keene of CBS Radio. Don't miss him Friday night on most of these same stations. And now once again, Thomas Highland, and the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on Rashi Among the Crocodiles, and the prank he played. A few words about South Konkan, India, in the summer of 1894. The weather was fine, and the jute crop was phenomenal. Sir Ramsay Gwendon, better known as Sir Ramsay of the Loom, had just endeared himself to the populace by establishing the first twine and rope factory in the area, utilizing all but a small portion of the available jute. True, Sir Ramsay was later vilified as a slaveholder and his factories torn down by hand by enraged natives. Nevertheless, he is down in history as one of India's first prime users of jute. Now, of the town, Mahadwat is, as we know, a rather insignificant part of the province. And in the summer, it is apt to run against the grain, especially the grains of Englishmen who are not much used to the brutal heat and swelter. So it came to pass that the Englishman who happened to be in town at the time, and who was a policeman, is an Englishman who should be admired. His name, Roger Sharman, a man of infinite patience.
Go on.
I did not kill my son. I did not.
Well, go on.
I loved my son. He was my strong right hand and my boon.
A moment. My dear.
Yes, sir?
What is it that you tell me has been bruited about in the bazaar? The child?
Ask anyone.
No, I ask you.
That this old man hated his son, cursed him, and threatened to kill him.
Sir,
go on.
Do you know of this girl?
No. No, what about her?
She walks slow and smiles with ease.
Go on.
She is not to be trusted. She speaks lies.
Oh, good fellow. How do you explain this bow? Well?
Pardon, sir?
This bow. How do you explain it? The one we found in the crocodile pit.
Sir?
Yes, child.
The old man cannot explain the bone, for it is the bone of Rashi, of his shoulder.
I swear to you, I would not kill my son, I swear it.
Is it not true that you argued?
True.
And that you wished him dead?
In the fit of...
Dear man, I'm afraid you're under arrest.
When will you tear him in two?
Child, listen to me.
Yes?
No longer the law of the jungle, but the civilized law. Udi Mataba will be tried, and justice will prevail.
Justice will prevail. This means death?
If he is guilty.
I am not guilty.
Dear fellow, you say that so often. What are you trying to hide, dear fellow?
History is full of coincidences. Not the least of which, the fact that the Sikh Pedwar was at this very moment in the village studying fossils. Amazing, you say. Nevertheless, a fact. Sikh Pedwar, but lately returned from postgraduate study at Cambridge, was hunting bone shards and artifacts at the old formations outside of the village. And it was to him Inspector Roger Sharman came.
I hope it won't be too much trouble, old boy.
From this?
Yes. I've heard it's done to reconstruct the figure of the man from the bone section.
Yes, yes it is. However...
Yes?
What are you trying to prove?
Dear fellow, should the figure you construct be 5.5 feet in height, of wide construction, and neck a bit longish, I'm told, then we shall have proof that a young man named Rashi has been chewed by the crocodiles.
I'll do my best.
Well said, old boy. Well said.
And 2 days later, Roger sent a runner to Pedwar, asking for a progress report.
Tell the sub I haven't yet begun to work on his project.
And a week later...
Some progress. Tell the sub to give me a fortnight.
And in a fortnight...
Tell the sub I'm sorry I was interrupted. My sister came of age and there was a celebration.
And a week after that...
Tell the sub he's welcome to come to see the reconstruction. Tell him I suggest he bring along the chap who's accused of the deed.
Which the runner did.
Good. Very good. Excellent. Thank you. Bully.
Now,
This way, gentlemen.
It is not my son. It will not be my son. But if it is my son, I did not do it. I swear it.
Will you keep saying that, old chap?
Right in here. There.
I say, it is not my son. It is not
of
my...
Of course it is not. It's a water buffalo.
Oh, I say. But then a joint of water buffalo was thrown to the crocodiles and not for ashes.
They would say so.
Then I am free. Hold on, old boy. Only a part of your case against you has been destroyed. Your son is still missing, and we don't know what you've done with him. You're charged, and you must stand trial. It's the law. Come along. Padua.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In the north, dear Kamala, towards Scotland, when the summer comes in gently, there are nights such as this.
And are you very rich, Inspector?
Please, child, call me Roger.
Are you very rich, Roger?
Rich?
Yes.
How do you mean, child?
Money.
Child, you must listen to me.
To what?
The letter.
Letter?
That you received that said Udi murdered his father.
He did.
That said he threw his son into the pit with the crocodiles.
He did.
And the bone? It is the bone of a water buffalo, child.
How could you know?
But you knew.
How could you know? How wise you must be.
And Rashi is alive.
How very wise you must be.
Is he alive?
Come. I know a place nearby.
Kamala.
Come.
No.
Come.
Kamala.
Why?
Kamala, you cannot let an old man die. If Rashi is alive...
If Rashi is alive. If Rashi is alive. Find out if he is alive. Go.
Roger Sharman was a conscientious constable. Neither warm summer night, nor scent of lotus, nor closeness of Kamala, who wore a jewel and bells on her ankles, none of these distracting elements could keep him from his appointed tasks. His next move was obvious. Armed with a full description of the lad, he traveled downriver to the town of Gumbau, and there made inquiry.
Rashi, of the village Mahadwat, therefore a stranger to this village. Have you seen him?
And the answer was... No.
About this high, given to wearing beggar's clothes?
And the answer was a shrug. So, journey to Maharashtra and the inquiries. No. And the shrug. And to Pune. Pune of the fabulous temple of Shiva. And there was a beggar in front of it.
Of the village Mahadwat?
Exactly.
And of this height?
Precisely.
And young?
Yes.
And nose not too prominent, nor yet too small?
Yes.
And dressed in rags beyond belief?
Good, very good.
And his name?
Rashi.
Of the village Mahadwat?
Exactly.
And of this height?
Oh, yes, I understand, old boy. Only sporting.
A week ago, Rashi of Mahadwat went to Shadur to the festival of Vishnu.
The goddess Vishnu embraced thee with all...
I say, old boy, isn't your name Rashi? Aren't you from Mahadwat? Aren't you...
No.
I say, don't try to run. You...
Oh, very well.
I say... Now!
No.
Don't tussle. No, it's useless, you know. You're caught. You're a prisoner of the crown. Now, come along.
Mm-hmm.
I therefore present to the Crown this thesis, that Udi Matabar strangled his son until he was dead. Then in the still of the night he did...
I did not, I swear.
He did dispose of the body of his son Rashi. I ask the court to look at the accused. Where in the court's memory has he seen such evil in a face? Such depravity.
I am a good man. I have never harmed even a...
A face eaten by lust and avarice. His tongue tells the lie of serpents, and his eyes mirror the wantonness
no,
of...
No. This is my face, but I'm older.
So in summation, I ask that this symbol of wickedness incarnate be condemned to the gallows and...
Let us through, won't you?
What disturbance?
I'm sorry to spoil the show, old boy.
What is this?
Well, there'd be no murder, old boy. This bundle of rags is...
Rashi, my son.
It is I, father.
Ah, you see?
What a show.
Rashi.
They would hang you.
No. I knew you would come back.
You knew?
Yes. Because you are my son.
Father.
Yes.
Once I was not your son. Now I am.
Did you hear?
Father.
Yes, son.
It is written, when the moon is Ganges plucked, Vishnu looks with favor on a son who does not stray.
Well said, O boy. Bully.
And arm in arm they went home, father and son. And the father was more generous with his wealth, and the son more generous with his love. And the girl Kamala? Why, Rashi married her, and they had a lot of trouble with their children. And the Ganges flowed down to the sea. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. Rashi Among the Crocodiles, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Jack Edwards was heard as Rashi, Jane Webb as Kamala, Edgar Barrier as Udi, and Van Wright as Roger. Featured in the cast were William Conrad, Jack Crucian, and Eric Snowden, Bob Lamont speaking. And here again is Thomas Highland. Next week, the Caribbees in the year 1704, when a girl could get a wedding present that meant something, like an island, even if it hurt her husband's career. My report to you will be on Blackbeard's 14th wife. Why she was no good for him. Thank you. Good night.
CBS, CBS Radio will follow you wherever you may go. So if you want the very best, tune us in and be our guest on CBS, CBS, CBS Radio.
Lionel Barrymore's Radio Hall of Fame is great Sunday night drama on the CBS Radio Network.
There's more from Richard Diamond, Crime Classics, Case Closed, and all of the other Relic Radio podcasts at relicradio.com. There's a Shoutcast stream there with even more old-time radio, lots to listen to, all for free thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.